Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, we better look at the business stories that are making this morning's newspapers. I'm delighted to be joined in studio by Caroline Bocal, the CEO of Bordish Gowara, and Ronan Reid from Cantor. You're both very welcome to the programme. Ronan, I thought $2.7 billion was something you spent on a children's hospital, but according to the front page of the Daily Mail today, that's what's going to be the cost of the state tender to upgrade the ticketing system on our trains and buses to contactless. I had to read this headline twice when I saw the number and I saw what it was for.
Yeah, devil is in some of the detail, though. I mean, I did think overall, looking at the papers, there wasn't a lot in stories, so a couple of them got hammed up just a little bit. I'm sure we'll touch on one or two of them later.
Yeah.
But the ticketing side, this is over 20 years. It's not saying it's $2.7 billion. I think the good old mail,
they're great at headlines.
I think the figure paid is $243 million, still an awful lot of money in terms of it. And I'd say it's probably based around how you have to tender nowadays and you have to say the maximum amount it is. So nobody was left out that could have been in it, but there isn't a lot of detail behind it other than people aghast, comparing it to bike sheds and comparing it to everything else. But the detail is actually it's over 10 years in a payment, and the figure actually mentioned it is $243 million at one point.
Well, thanks for pointing that out, because I think it's important the way a headline can lead a story.
It doesn't lead.
Yeah, but when it's getting in under the bonnet, Caroline, we see, as Ron has pointed out, this is over 10 or 20 years.
Yeah, so what they've done here is they've put a framework together so they can choose from a big menu of options potentially, and they've thrown everything into the bucket just in case to avoid problems later, I would suggest. But yeah, 243 reported that has been awarded to Indra over 10 years, so a much smaller figure. So it remains to be seen how much is actually
interesting as well. I think there was mention of the London Underground and indeed the Underground in New York, both of which have had this kind of system up and going for the last decade. I think now when you go to London, you know, you just take out your credit card and off you go, and it works on everything.
Yeah, and I think there is a huge demand from customers for the contactless payment that you can pay with your phone, but the technology, as you say, well established there. So I think the figure that's actually been contracted is probably closer to the cost of rolling out something like that. But who knows what the next 20 years will bring in terms of technology. So
it does, and it always brings me a point of benchmark stuff better. I saw stuff that actually ourselves, the UK and the US, are bad at building things, all of us. This was comparing the cost of building 1 metre of a tunnel to put cars or trains through. And in Europe, it's a far lower cost than it is in Ireland or the UK or elsewhere. So we're not great. The tendering system we run tends to push things up.
Yeah, no, and I don't know what you thought of last week's budget, Ronan. Cliff Taylor has, you know, again, always gives great analysis. He talks about, you know, a budget better for better off people with children. And again, he cites the more children you have, the better. But it's a good kind of look back on last week and a good summary of what we've got. Yeah, what did you make of it?
Well, it was like, you know, something for everyone and not enough, I think, was the budget overall.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I think the thing that disappointed me was no strategy. Like, we are on election footing, whether it's now, whether it's X number of months. And there was no strategy laid out of where you're going. It was double payments now, cash payments. I think we touched on some of the areas of childcare and other areas that could have been funded more. I think frontline payments and things could have been highlighted out, frontline services and other areas even more than they were. But quite a lot of the areas is quite confusing to try and actually read through and understand it.
Yeah.
It doesn't really relieve on the housing that much, but housing has a different problem that we'll talk about. So there was no real strategy. If you had kids, it was better. I remember my sons during the financial crisis saying, okay, one of them would have to be sold. And the younger lad said, well, they still get child allowance for me, so you're gone. But I think child allowance was clearly targeted and double payments, very similar to the US parachute payments
and
ahead of an election.
Yeah, he calls it the extraordinary decision to pay child benefit twice in November and December.
Yeah.
The double-double is central in this. This is aimed at the large swathe of middle-aged voters, hard-pressed families, and the timing is tilted towards an early election. But
think of it as a parent, you'd hardly double your kids' pocket money twice in a month. You'll phase it out over a period because bad habits, it just gets spent, it gets factored in.
What was your thoughts around it, Caroline?
Yeah, I think it was interesting, the Fiscal Advisory Council during the week asking the question, when do one-off payments cease being one-off payments?
Yeah.
You know, when you've got a fuel payment three times, you know, all of these benefits will find their way back into the economy because the whole point is to keep things moving. So even though, you know, it certainly seems to be focused on cost of living, it will tilt back into the economy. But as Cliff Taylor says, it's going to provide very interesting and tricky choices for the next government in terms of how they follow this.
Yeah. Come next year's budget, households will again be looking for cash support. If the money is there, politicians will find it impossible to say no.
Absolutely.
And oil prices up 10% yesterday. Mm. Like fuel prices are going back up.
Yeah, okay. Just staying with, I suppose, another fallout from that, because it is central to the budget, to the election. Will extra cash boost delivery of housing? And you're right, Ronan, there's a lot of numbers floating around in this and a lot of people talking about 30,000 versus 40,000. But, you know, what is going to be built next year?
Well, I think the difference between the 30 and 40,000, an awful lot, will be the apartment market. I mean, effectively, build costs went up 20%, interest rates went up, so the cost of building went up. And then the value of apartments, you can't sell apartments one by one, so you sell the block.
Yeah.
And when interest rates went up, the value of apartments went down. So you had a fall in value and you had an increase in build costs. So you can see the amount of building sites without fresh build starting. Things that were started will be finished. But then I think after that, there are greater challenges. And I think that'll be a lower number in around what we're seeing. And the other things all exist. It takes 4 years from when you buy a site to turn sod.
Yeah.
All the other things that are there and the interest rate cost over the period. And I think it's there's no sitting strategy. Just giving money for the government to spend it on sites doesn't solve part of the issue. It's to do with inflation, build costs, planning. All of those issues sit within the middle of it. And they need, like for me, they've always needed a 10-year strategy to solve it.
Yeah.
Not a 1-year strategy of putting money in.
Yeah. Caroline, the piece in Cantillon points out a construction sector that has been dogged by labour shortages in the post-COVID environment, while private sector financing costs remain elevated. That's the point Ronan was making there.
Mm-hmm.
But I hear a lot of the building company chiefs saying that they're not daunted by the labour shortages. But it's clearly a problem. Have you tried to get a plumber or an electrician anytime recently? They're in short supply.
Mm. Yeah, but again, I suppose, look, we have to keep putting money into it to get the housing out at the other end. Cantillon saying that commencement figures are promising, that we've got a good pipeline for 2025. It does seem to be hovering around that 35,000 units a year, but it has to be welcomed. The more money we're putting into this is the first point. It's going up from 3.9 billion to 4.5. It's certainly moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
Needs to keep going.
Let's stay with property in a different sense, because two papers this morning reporting on the Dublin property market. A press release from CBRE is telling us hugely positive demand for Dublin offices. Office leases outstrips last year's levels. Ronan, what did you make of this? I think
press release is pretty good. I think that probably clarifies it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the relevant figure is the still 18% vacancy rate.
Which is nearly one in five premises.
Yeah, one in five premises. Yeah. And a lot of the use of space is quite a number of the accountancy practices had delayed moves over the last two or three years. And now they're moving and that eats up quite an amount. It's accountancy practice and legal. Part of that's ESG. They have to get to more higher grade when you tender for business.
But one point, it's cited in the article, if you take a company like EY, they've agreed a lease assignment from LinkedIn at IPUTS 2 and 3, Wilton Park and Dublin 2. Mm-hmm. So they go from Harcourt Street over to Wilton Place. What happens to Harcourt Street?
Exactly. And I think that's what you're seeing, is you're seeing the vacancy. A couple of years ago when that was happening, we had a number of the co-working spaces like WeWork and other places took various spaces, but they're not there. Tech companies are the big pullers out of space. I think it's like, you know, and this happens. You go from like 5 to 20% vacancy, less gets built, it works out over a period of time. But nowadays, you also need to have, like, you know, carbon neutral offices, you need to have quite a lot. So new stock favours very much older stock over the period. And also, I think one critical thing will be what ultimately happens on work from home rules. Like, there's a lot of debate in other countries. They're saying, hey, back to work.
Yeah.
That increases your demand for space over time as well.
Yeah, I think as well, out of this, Caroline, and Ronan's right when he points out that this high energy rating is something that will always be filled because these businesses have a need for that. But it's get what gets left behind. And if we talk about that middle tier office block that was built in the 80s, well, I think it may augur well for George in Dublin, for instance, that we might find a way that would come back into housing, going back to our previous point.
Absolutely. I mean, the article by Donal Buckley in the Irish, in the Indo, he talks about the need for sustainable office space. So you're absolutely right. That top tier is going to be taken up, and the A-rated buildings are going to be absorbed. It's what happens, having worked in one of those Georgian buildings in Harcourt Street myself for a long time. They're very, very tricky buildings to retrofit. It's hard to see how they could be done efficiently. So I think it would be great to see a regeneration on the back of that. But again, you know, looking at sort of post-COVID and that hybrid working, where that settles, I don't think it's fully determined. But the article saying that there are still more incentives on offer compared with pre-COVID pandemic time. So
that means the price is cheaper.
Yeah. So I think there's a positivity being relayed in this article, maybe.
I've seen some of the Georgian buildings go to apart hotels, which is great, where people come to say it's a great move for them as well.
Of course it is. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll watch this space. Ronan, I was particularly keen on your take as a former director of the Irish Stock Exchange. I was interested in your take on Joe Brennan's piece today, Core Energy Offers Cautionary Tale as Government Bids to Revive IPOs. And I know in the budget, the government and IPOs, I thought it's even strange to see them mentioned in a budget document, but Jack Chambers is clearly interested in this space. But Joe Brennan, I suppose, unfortunately, cites the last two examples as being relatively negative from a business perspective.
And they are. I mean, there's two things happening. I mean, those two cases are poor. And separately, a number of the very large PLCs have moved to other markets and have moved overseas to other markets. The main first reason is we don't have a big investment management fraternity in Dublin. Like, you know, you go to London, you're raising capital or doing otherwise, you have hundreds of institutions you can go and see, and particularly in the small cap sector. And the second thing I think highlighted is in both cases, they shouldn't float when they're pre-profitability, because you got to raise money all the time. And if you don't deliver, it gets hammered.
Yeah. So the two examples cited, Caroline, are the first company is Health Beacon, the last company to float. And basically, Joel Brennan's analysis saying that it was an unwise IPO. The same he's saying about Core Energy, and he's saying that the odds of them being on the Isaac in 6 months' time is slim. So by way of examples, they're both very negative.
Yeah, and really interesting companies. You know, you've got Health Beacon developing digital sharps bins, helping people to stick to their injection schedules, not quite biomedical, but certainly knocking on the door of that. And then Core Energy, really interesting company where it's developing storage facilities for renewable power, specifically looking at salt caverns. So, but saying, as you said, that they just maybe weren't ready to make that step. They were obviously moving quickly to try to monetize their investments, and they just didn't have that profitability base. So now frantically doing funding rounds, trying to pull that together, but very challenging.
They both needed to raise equity capital as part of their business tenant. I always believe you should float when you've done it. The only sector I've ever seen that works in the pre-revenue or pre-profitability stages is probably the biotech. Because people are used to buying it, and it's a 10-year play. But you're next in Dublin. Its main focus and profitability is listing of funds and listing of bonds. That was always its profitability.
Sure.
That's why you're next bought it in the first place. We don't have a big community. One thing they could do is make stock options and multinationals more attractive and make them have to list in Ireland. Like we've suggested that over the years many times and it hasn't been taken up on. That's a way of improving the listings.
Absolutely. Caroline, the UK pub chain, Tim Martin out in force, signals financial recovery. Irish pubs are mentioned in this, but this is JD Weatherspoon restoring their dividend. Strong numbers coming out of there. 74% jump in its annual profits. Citing resilient customer demand and pub disposals.
Yeah, really interesting. Huge jump in profits, as you say, 74%, saying that they're returning to their financial strength that they had pre-pandemic. But interesting that the sort of take they make on it. They say that they weren't really affected by the wet summer, but they were somewhat affected by the riots in England and Northern Ireland in August, putting, as they say, a slight dampener on their performance. But on the positive side, saying that the Euros were very positive for them. But interesting, they're saying that they are now looking to prominently market coffee and breakfast. So not something we would have associated with Weatherspoons.
I had to read that again. The pub group, sometimes referred to as Spoons, is prominently marketing coffee and breakfast, which aren't traditional areas of strength for pubs, to lure early customers. There you go.
They won't compete with insomnia.
Irish down in Spoons, Ronan. That should get you in.
But contrast it to Press Up here, which has had to go through a whole restructure.
Absolutely.
Weatherspoons are very disciplined to their location, to what they spend or don't spend on, and their
back-paying dividends.
Yeah, it's a formula and a very clear formula. I'm not sure breakfast fits in with that, but it's a formula.
Let's have a quick look in the States. Again, the jobs data reinforcing views that the US economy in for a soft landing. And this is kind of critical at this point when we're 4 weeks out from an election, Ronan. Interest rates cut the first time in 4 years.
Yeah.
What was your take on the American economy?
The jobs data has surprised people. It's been stronger over a period of time. The US economy is always very sensitive to any slight improvement. The dollar's been incredibly stable over the period. Like, it's between 109, 111, which always benefits them over time. And the higher rates didn't have the same level of impact. But what you did see were companies a number of years ago, at the end of, during the pandemic, they cut back very heavily. So that then meant that when they came out of it, that they were still in the hiring. So their employment numbers are good. The Fed are seeing inflation lower and inflation targets. A lot of people believe that inflation measures don't reflect cost of living because they're old baskets.
Well, they're saying that the prices are up 19% on 2021, which is significant.
Well, you know a lot. I mean, you'll have in the next month, so we'll have whatever Black Friday coming up at some point, and you'll get a good sense of it. But the US economy has been resilient. I mean, you've had the approach from countries insular, like protecting their own tariff externally, trying to drive demand internally. Same in the UK. It's reflecting the Spoons numbers that people are doing that. But economies are performing well. The only thing I would say is that people see the stock market as an indicator, but it's been seven stocks that traditionally perform most of it.
Caroline, briefly, I wanted to talk about the mayor of New York is also having some difficulty. But it's a related story just because it's American. But there's some amazing things coming out of New York City at the moment. Tell us more.
This is a fantastic story. So this is a story in the Times about Eric Adams, the mayor of New York, who's described as a swaggering, weird mayor of New York. So he is having some difficulties at the moment. He's the first in 110 mayors in New York to actually face indictment, and he is being indicted for fraud. Specifically, that he received luxury travel stays in snazzy hotels valued at $100,000 from Turkish business interests. He said he was doing this to help the Turkish community hurry through the opening of their consulate without the requisite fire inspection. And he was also he's also facing charges of illegal donations, but he's quite the character. He says things like, "I'm the pilot, you are all the passengers, you'd better pray this plane lands, stop praying that it crashes."
Oh, stop. Okay, we'll have to leave it there. Caroline Bockel and indeed Ronan Reid, thank you for both for a great review of the business stories and a few others. Always good to talk. Have a lovely weekend.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.